you're currently listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
Sound what?
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of Sound Sessions. Thank you.
I love fun. Fun is a thing I like.
You know, Kevin, I love fun interviews, too, and that was such a fun time with Matt from Matt and Kim.
Yeah, he seems like he likes fun.
Mm-hmm. I'd say so. Not the band fun, but just fun in general.
Well, he might. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But yeah, you know, we covered a lot of things with Matt, whether it was, you know, the dynamic of a dating band.
Yeah, it'd be so weird.
It's just a two-piece, so that was interesting to me.
And they're sticking together, and like being on the road all that time,
it's got to be tough.
It definitely does. And we talked about the Chicago cold, which is always a big part of living here in the city, and how he made the contrast from New York and Chicago, which was interesting.
Yeah. So he likes to grill, we found out, too.
Oh, yeah. Putting together that Weber grill. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And overall, I think what it comes down to is, just like this intro, we have to kiss it.
Yep. Keep it simple, stupid.
That's right. So without further ado, here is our interview with Matt from Matt and Kim.
Hey, what's up? This is Matt from Matt and Kim, and you're listening to Sound Session.
Get it. Get it. Get it.
Hey, welcome into another episode of Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. You know, Kevin, I am so happy to be welcoming one of my favorite groups to the show. Matt and Kim have been literally lighting up the stage with their dancey, heart pulsing anthems, and actually the Brooklyn duo will be playing at the North Coast Music Festival here in Chicago on Sunday, September 4th, and we welcome Matt Johnson to the show. What's going on, Matt?
Not much. I like that even when I called to introduce you to myself, I said, it's Matt and Kim Matt. Matt Johnson doesn't mean anything.
Right. The last name doesn't matter, apparently.
For all we know, your name could be and Kim.
I feel like, Matt Johnson, try getting the Gmail address with that. It's possible.
It's so true. Yeah, you're blessed and cursed with that perfect name and that perfect crisp voice that we were talking about, too.
I feel like, as I was joking, my voice does not have the ability to clarify telephone signals, but I did go through speech classes as a middle schooler because I had a big problem with my R's and L's. I'd say I really like that, you know, that. And it's crazy because as a kid, you just can't hear that. And they would take me out of class to go to speech class. I hated it so much.
This happened to me, too. I can relate.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What was your word, Kevin?
I think I struggled with, I don't even remember, but it was just, I rushed through my words, which I still suffer from, but yeah. Mm-hmm. You're articulate as heck, Matt.
I don't know, I still feel like, you know, some people are not used to hearing their voice back. I'm sure all three of us are, but sometimes I'm still like, why do I talk like a frog? You know, it's always surprising. If we all sounded half as cool as we sound in our heads, mm-hmm. like, we'd all sound like Barry White or something.
Yes.
It's so true. You know, I, and to be honest, I got to just mention, I had the same thing when I was going through school with my R's, and sometimes I'm so aware of it right now, you know, that I push these R's, and then I'm like, I listen back, and I'm like, why do you beat yourself up about these silly little words? Just get over it, Mike.
I think you can continue to beat yourself up on that. I'm going to hold that against you.
Oh, no. Well, you know, Matt, one thing I love about Matt and Kim is not only your energy and your humor and the great, like, fun shows that you guys put out, is that you have so many amazing videos. I mean, they're all phenomenal. You have one where you were dancing on your bed, stripping in New York. The new one is old school family photos. Oh, and the newest one is actually this really cool great camera angled video, which I want to ask you about later. But I wanted to know, how do you come up with the concepts for these videos?
Well, I mean, most of them do come from me and Kim. I got a notepad on my phone full of good and bad ideas. We both went to art school. And we're visual people as well as music people. We met at art school, Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. And I was there for film, actually. But, I like the the old school advertising kind of terminology that if you explain an idea to someone, like it should be intriguing in one sentence. That's what I always think. I think a lot of music videos become like way too complicated. Okay, we're going to shoot like in a kind of cool room, but then there's going to be a subplot with a girl and we're going to cut back and forth. You have no idea what's going on.
Right.
But to me, it's like, oh, Matt and Kim strip naked in Times Square. Okay, that sounds interesting. Matt and Kim, yeah, dance while sleeping in bed. Yeah, sort of interesting. Matt and Kim beat the crap out of each other. I'd watch that. So any idea that has worked for me has sort of been like, it works in a sentence, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's all to the point. And that's why it's just, you know, with the kiss, you know, keep it simple, stupid. I think that's one of the things that you got to do. And I think that really comes through with your videos, the fact that they're so intriguing. I just want to watch them all over again. And the fact that, you know, you have this great soundtrack already built in. I mean, it makes for just an amazing music video.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And I think we were also lucky in the sense that we had no budgets starting out as a band, so we had to think of sort of a clever ideas that you could do for no money. But then, unlike many bands, I feel, who then, you know, grow and they have more money to make a video, so it gets more and more complicated and whatnot. We just kept it simple. We kissed it.
You kissed it.
How have I not heard that expression?
I never.
That I live by.
Wow. Well, so even, I feel like the band name is even embracing that mindset, and I'm really curious. So Matt and Kim, it's your names. It's straightforward. It's simple. It's to the point. I'm kind of curious, were there ever any, like, fallback ideas or, like, ideas you kind of had in the mix for a band name?
Yeah, band names are tough. They're really tough.
Truly.
I mean, I don't have a child, but I imagine it's kind of like naming a child. It's the first thing where a lot of times before someone see someone or meet someone or whatever, it's the first thing you know about them. So we struggled with it for a while. The only other viable name we had was the Scream Team.
That's fun. That's still fun. I like that.
What that came from was Kim's make-believe band when she was like 9 years old, where she played either a tennis racket or an upside-down trash can. Covering like what was like Thin Lizzy songs or something, I forget. But that was heard the name of that. That's where it came from.
I think that could have worked. I like Matt and Kim, but Scream Team is cool and it's got a nice backstory to it.
Yeah, I mean, and in the end, we didn't even dub ourselves Matt and Kim. We weren't really planning on playing a show and or being a band. Kim just wanted to learn how to play drums, and a friend convinced us to open for his band in the basement of an art gallery in Queens, and they just put us our names, and that's what stuck. I think they put Matthew and Kimberly, which is obviously a little too formal. We're not in trouble here, but I do think in the end, you know, in the Kiss way, of keeping it simple, or also I feel like we want to be on that first name basis with our listeners. And yeah, I feel it was very fitting for just our attitudes and all of that.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads into my next question. Your new 4-song EP, We Were the Weirdos, has been delighting the audiences like since it was put out before your Coachella appearance. Now, does this kind of draw from those early days, you know, when you guys were kind of, you know, art students and just, you know, maybe against the fray a little bit, being a 2-person band and everything? So what's the inspiration behind this title?
Well, if you look it up on Spotify or somewhere, you notice the cover of it is my high school senior yearbook photo, in which I have this big crazy hair. And
I didn't think that. Wait for a minute. I did not think that was a real photo. I thought, oh, they're going back, you know, with some makeup and stuff. That's your real photo from high school?
Yeah, high school senior yearbook photo.
Wow.
I actually had to be framed lower than everyone else. Like, my eyeline was lower to try to fit all my hair in there. The hair technique I used to use was to, you take, like, bar soap, like an ivory soap, you get it all over your hands, and then you work it into your hair, and then you let it dry out. And let me tell you, you can make, your hair smells like a bar of soap, and it's kind of disgusting in a way, mm-hmm. which you wouldn't think from a bar soap, but it's very effective if anyone's going for that hairstyle in 2016.
Yeah, I think that's what Beyonce does, right, for her hair?
Yeah.
top stylists know. Mm-hmm. But I was into punk rock. That's what got me into playing music throughout my teenage years. Me and my brother and then other friends, we played in bands. We were the weirdos. I grew up in a small town in Vermont, and we were the ones with, you know, funny hair and like studded clothing and stuff like that. But that's also what made it so I ever thought I could play music. Meaning it was punk rock is a good gateway for a lot of things for people, whether it's music or even people I know who are now fashion designers and things like that. You start doing things for yourself, whether it was putting on shows or like stitching your own pants up or whatever, and mm-hmm. you realize, oh, it's not like going to shows in an arena and being like, well, I could never be up there. You're like, you're at a show in the basement of a VFW hall, and you're like, well, I'm basically in the band already. I'm standing right
next to you. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite shows were in a VFW.
Yeah, the classic, you know, I don't know how much of that happens in places like Chicago or New York.
The suburbs.
Whatever, yeah. And then Kim, her brother was a rave DJ throughout all of her years growing up, and she actually went to Penn State on a running scholarship when she first graduated high school before she went to Pratt. And wow. They used to not let her wear her own clothes because they were whatever crazy rave type clothes, I'm guessing, you know, they would make her dress in her teammates' clothes on on track meets because she didn't represent Penn State.
Yeah, I guess you can't really do the long jump too well with like glow sticks and mood rings hanging from your self.
I don't know. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see the try.
2020 Olympics, here we come. So, you know, Matt, why is it important to be a weirdo in these profession or in any given profession, whether it be you're a musician, an actor, a chef, or like a fireman? I mean, what is the importance of, you know, being creative and true to yourself in these situations?
Well, I think you said it right there with the words true to yourself. Mm-hmm. I do feel a lot of times maybe people, there's been bands out there, bands I've known, who will work on an album for however long it takes and they'll finish it and they'll say, well, you know, I'll probably listen to that once and that'll be it. Because they're making music they think someone else wants to hear. And to me, I think it's being true to yourself is making what you want to make, even if it's kind of strange. Like, that EP, I fully embraced my weird voice, which has always been. And sometimes we've talked in the studio of how to make my voice more listenable, less irritating. I don't know what type of words you might want to use. But I think embracing the things that make you unique or weird or whatever is great.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
I want to know too. I'm reading here about the kind of going back to the video work. So Let's Run Away, your newest video, is using the centrophone technique. What is that?
Well, I saw it because there was a video of this skier who came up with the idea, which was he used an iPhone and he 3D printed this little vessel. It's hard to explain. But then ran a fishing wire off it, basically making it so you could swing an iPhone around over your head. Like, say, 6 feet of line connected to a phone, swinging it around your head.
Okay.
And so we kind of took this. We did it a little differently. I used a GoPro because I wanted to be a little more resilient. And I used a coat hanger, like a standard wooden coat hanger that you can, you know, I can get out of my closet, which actually from where I'm sitting – on the third floor of my house. I can see it stuck in a tree from where this contraption went flying off the roof. I got stuck in there when we shot it. But so basically you shoot this footage while swinging this camera around over your head, trying not to hit yourself in the face with it as you're swinging it as fast as you can. And it kind of has this effect that's like, what they called bullet time in the Matrix movies.
I could see that.
Because you slow it way down, like 10 times as slow. But if you jump, the camera's spinning around you. I call it the poor man's bullet time. But it was a lot of fun, me and Kim running around Brooklyn, swinging this camera, people giving us weird looks. And she only took it to the face once.
Ooh,
so,
ouch.
You know, spraying champagne, throwing money in the air.
Mm-hmm.
We were on our roof and the cable snapped.
So you guys did this whole music video in front of people? You didn't, like, you don't permit yourself in certain areas? You just went out in New York and did this in the public?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's been a thematic thing in Matt and Kim video making. We have a number of videos. There's one for Block After Block of us going around and doing sort of like pop-up shows in the middle of intersections and stuff like that. Yes, us and permits have never really, haven't had it much. Or there was one video for Hey Now where we're dancing in front of the Brooklyn Bridge. And but this one, the weird thing is I don't know if people couldn't see it, because we'd be, at one point we're like down near the Brooklyn Bridge, in a very touristy area with the skyline right there. And I'm swinging this camera as fast as I can, as people are just, they don't even let it stop them. They just keep walking right at us until I have to, like, basically just spit it directly to the ground so I don't take someone's face off. People in New York, they're just over it all, I guess.
Yeah, they do not want to be involved in anyone's life. It's like I'm doing my own thing. You know, swing that camera around all you want. I got things to do. I'm going to get some coffee.
Right.
Yeah. It's so that's been a lucky for us, mm-hmm. as having shot a number of music videos in New York City, that as long as you're not too much in their way. Even though I do remember when we shot a scene from that Block After Block video, mm-hmm. in the middle of the Brooklyn Bridge, and we had tweeted out right before, come to the Brooklyn Bridge, we're shooting the last shot of this video. And so there was tons of people in the middle, and oh my gosh, people got so angry about not being able to cross the bridge for like 8 minutes. you would have thought we would have like set their houses on fire.
So Matt, I was creeping on your guys' Instagram a little bit ago, and I saw you were putting together a Weber grill. Good choice. Have you had a chance to kind of put that to use? Is that something you're into?
Well, we had a block party that day here in on our street in Brooklyn. Time to upgrade this grill. Maybe you saw on that, I have many years of Lego building experiences from instructions. And, dude, it's... that's my jam, building stuff from it. But we got that thing going. We made some stuff for the neighborhood. It works, yeah.
There you go. How long did the whole process of putting that whole thing together go?
Would it be going too far to say I nailed it?
Not at all.
There wasn't no pieces left over.
Hey, that's a big move. That's great.
Oh, man, don't you hate when, like, one screw is left over?
And then you're worried. You're like, oh, did I miss it somewhere? And then it's going to fall apart on me one day?
And it's always the smallest little thing. Or, like, those little nubs you put over the screws.
Right.
I always lose those.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then I feel like it looks like a total piece of crap.
Well, I mean, yeah, when you lose a part, a mystery part from something that is running on flammable gas.
That's an issue.
There's always a little worry that goes with that.
What kind of stuff do you like to grill? Because I'm a huge griller, too. I love hamburgers and sausage. What do you got cooking up for Labor Day weekend?
Well, see, I was vegetarian for 15 years, and I'm sort of only recently out of my vegetarianism and exploring non-vegetarian food. But I do tend to go back to the veggie burger and stuff, but I also like grilled corn, and I am an amateur at best. Also, if someone gives me like a handful of things to grill, I am stressed out. Multiple different items at the same time.
Mm-hmm,
my
mm-hmm.
God! So you're an expert at this. You can You can handle that?
Let me say there is a lot of pressure going on for multiple meats, and yes, I'd say if you're giving me a hamburger, I would bring it out to an expertise level. I'm pretty sure.
So?
Keep the juices intact and then keep
it nice.
Don't
smush it. Yeah, oh yeah.
You can't smush it.
No.
And if you're doing a sausage, you gotta. It's all about the responsibility though. You gotta constantly keep checking it. What's this burger doing now? Is it like gonna be simmering? You gotta make sure that both sides are perfect. So yeah, and sometimes you know a good tip, even if you make a bad burger, toasting the bun always makes everything taste so much better.
I agree with that.
Okay, I'm taking notes here. but still, I don't know how you know if the middle is right. Do you have to open it up, or you just know? I mean, that must just come from experience.
Yeah, you know.
Look at the outside.
Go Google. Google is good for that. Just how long, how much heat do I, you know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes aside? Yeah, that should tell you. That's what I base my grilling on is Google.
On Google?
Yes.
I mean, I guess that's really what being an adult in 2016
exactly.
It's just Googling everything, no matter what we need to do. Like, how about when you're making these films and you're doing the new types of cameras and stuff like that? Is it just because, you know, you went to school for it and you're trying it out? Or do you need to go and take classes to do the centrifuge and stuff like that?
No, I am tutorialing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Always, she can tell right in the moment a tutorial voice starts speaking from the computer. She knows exactly what I'm doing. I mean, even I've produced a couple of our albums, and I had never recorded music before. And somehow I have, you know, a platinum record from one of those albums that I recorded in my childhood bedroom
my
old skateboard. But again, we live in a great time where there's so much available information, not just from official sources, but from other people who, you know, learn from their mistakes. And so, yeah, everything. I mean, whether it's fixing a toilet or a light switch or learning how to use a new plugin in Ableton or, you know, different editing software. I think it's a great time to be able to find all this stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you produce a lot of your own music then still?
Well, the path has sort of been we've two of the albums. So our second album I produced and our fourth album I produced. So sort of every other one I do. And then I get so stressed out by the end that I just say, I will never do this ever again. And then we work with someone else or some other people. And I'm like, you know what was cool? When I made that album.
those were the days, the bad albums. You know, Matt, but from making these albums, putting together grills, like going on world tours, how do you find the stamina to keep this kind of, you know, motivation up? How do you do this, man?
I think it depends. I'm lucky to have, it feels like a couple different, like writing music is very different from performing music. And I love that there's both sides of that because I love both sides of it. And once we've been on the road for a long time and doing a lot of shows and it's probably time to take a break, then I get to go make some, you know, some songs, write some songs. But then when when I finish an album and I'm never doing this ever again because I'm so stressed out, get to go perform them live. And, you know, when it comes to the live part, I'm actually not big on traveling. I think part of growing older, one of the few good parts about growing older is accepting the things you do and don't like. I think there's a lot of things like when you're younger, you're just like, well, maybe I like this. Maybe I like being at a bar till 4 a.m. I'm not really sure. So I should just keep doing it because that's what all my friends are doing. And eventually you're like, I don't really need that. Some point, I'd just rather go home and watch some Netflix. Or
oh yeah,
but so the traveling to me, I love doing shows, but that's basically 1 hour out of every 48 at the usually when we're flying into places and flying out of places. So it's just trying to keep a regular life, you know, things going. And luckily, I tour with my significant other, so I have that, and our crew are our friends, and then I just try to work on music or keep up with whatever TV show I'm watching while I'm on the plane. And yeah, but unfortunately, I think to some people's dismay, you know, I'll come back from like Sao Paulo or Paris or like, oh, what did you do? I'm like, I stayed in the hotel and then went to the backstage room and played this show.
Living that rock star life.
Woo! Yeah. But, you know, I think I never traveled before this band, and there's always a romance about traveling, especially before you do it. And some people are really cut out for it. But to me, I love playing the show, and that hour on stage makes it all worth it. But I think I found my rhythm.
Yeah. You know, you just made mention of it too. I'm really curious because, well, you know, you and Kim are an item. You guys are dating. Being in a band together can be a stressful thing, or even the writing process can be a stressful thing at times. And maybe it's a little more simple with only two members, only two voices kind of weighing in. But did you have to establish a precedent, like any stresses from the band can't carry over to the relationship, or what's that dynamic like?
Well, there's no separating it.
In my opinion, I think they're very similar. Being in a band and is to me very similar to being in a relationship to begin with.
Yeah, yeah, but that's the thing. It's something I learned, and I've played in other bands with like five guys before, and there's been a lot of disputes and compromises. And I think with compromise, a lot of times comes watering down of a final product.
Yeah.
Whether it's in music or you see it in movies sometimes where there's so many people who have to approve something that it's not even what the director or writer hoped to make in the first place. So Kim and I were really on the same page with a lot of things. We did art stuff before, projects together before we did the music together. So it's sort of, to me, rather than finding two people who are like good at their instruments, find two people who just work well together and then learn how to play your instrument. I think working well together is the hardest part about it. So luckily, we're two people who work well together. And I think it makes sense that your significant other should be someone you're compatible with.
Sure.
So even though I do think in any other relationship I'd been in, not that I've been in many, but that we would have murdered each other by this point with the amount of time we spend together, which is every second of every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you made mention earlier too of travel and not being a big fan and things like that. Dick Wolf, I'm not sure if you're familiar. He's the producer of like Law and Order. And he also does like all the Chicago series, like Chicago Med, Chicago PD, yada, yada. He just recently said, Chicago is a slightly nicer, slightly fatter New York City. What do you think about that, like comparing the two cities? And when you come to Chicago, are there any must-dos for you?
You know, I feel like in Chicago, well, what I know about when I, you know, traveling or whatever is that the towns I like to go to are just the towns I like to see people in, that I have friends in.
Okay.
And, you know, I feel like they all have bars and coffee shops and restaurants and all that, but Chicago, for some reason, there's always been this Brooklyn-Chicago connection of the people I hung with here in Brooklyn who had moved from Chicago, and then people from Brooklyn moved to Chicago, but both ways. So mm-hmm. I'm always excited to come there because we have a lot of friends there who come out to the show and hang out.
That's nice.
And get to see them, and that's what always makes things work. So when it comes to what I need to do, what I need is just comes down to the people, tolerant to the people. But the what was his quote again?
He says Chicago is a slightly nicer but slightly fatter version of New York, or something along those lines.
Okay, what's your feeling on that?
You know, I haven't been to New York, but having worked in the hospitality industry before, we used to always get told that, oh my God, Chicago is so much nicer. Mm-hmm. Like, the people are so much nicer, and it's that Midwestern hospitality, yada, yada. So I think maybe that's a thing, but, you know, I have not yet been to New York City, and I really need to get there. But so I can't weigh in, I guess.
Yeah, but still, I do think there is something about... there's a refreshingness I think a lot of people have with New York City, that people are straight, mm-hmm. you know, honestly, like, you know, they're very straight with you. They don't, which is things that like places like LA have a bad rap for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where people feel that a lot of times people are being fake or something. Right. I don't, it depends where you are, who you're dealing with. I love LA too, but I do think there's something about Chicago, which is great because I think it is an honest niceness. You know, it's a way one grows up maybe out in the Midwest that has, you know, where there's like community. And I feel that's one thing New York really lacks is community, which I think maybe that makes people not as nice to each other because they don't think of them like their neighbor,
sure.
even though they might live on the same block.
Yeah, I can see
as
that.
As for the weight, I don't know. Maybe you got to put on those extra pounds for those cold winters.
Could be.
That's very true. That's very true. It's funny to see, like, you know, when you're in California or when you're in LA and like everyone looks so nice and they're all like fit and everything. And then in New York, everyone is very like hip and they have really cool fashions. And you come back to Chicago and it's like, I don't know, we're in a starter jacket and like a t-shirt. Who cares? Sweatpants. No big deal. Nobody cares because everyone is just, you know, on the same page.
That's true liberation right there.
Right? Right?
Yes.
This all comes back to accepting the things you do and you don't like. You know, sometimes I don't like wearing like nice clothes. I want to throw on a pair of sweatpants or joggers, and I don't care.
Well, I think these things stem to weather. I think people in LA, where it's warm all the time and you're not wearing a lot of clothes, you have to be ready to show some skin.
Sure.
Granted, Chicago summer certainly get hot, but winter you have to be practical. Having grown up in Vermont, I was not practical growing up. I never wore long johns until I was like 28 years old. I would always wear like a waistcoat and I'd be on my bike and there'd be like 3 inches of my back showing. And then suddenly, like I said, as you get older, I was just like, I'm not screwing around with this cold anymore. I'm going to deck it out with a big stupid jacket, with like Sorel boots and two layers of long johns.
Oh, yeah.
Happy dude. So I feel people in Chicago had to accept that earlier on. Like, the fashion's going to have to go out when it comes to just trying to make it through this alive.
Yes, and forging through the cold is never fun. And that's why I'm so glad you guys are coming September 4th at the North Coast Music Festival when it is nice and warm and you're playing pretty much at a park and it's just going to be a really great thing to be a part of. Now, Matt, when you play these shows, by the way, your band plays an epic amount of shows. I've seen you a few times, and it's always a great time. But when you're playing, do you like playing the smaller venues, or do you like gravitating towards these bigger festivals when you can get a little bit more, a few more eyeballs on you because you played at, you know, Firefly Summerfest, Lollapalooza here in Chicago? So what's better, the smaller or the larger venue?
Well, luckily they both have really nice things about them, meaning it's great playing. We love playing festivals. I mean, that's been a big part of what we've done for the last number of years. But I think that's because I believe in playing a set that even if you've never heard us before, you should be able to enjoy it. I mean, this is still like it ropes in with other theories, same as with our music videos. I've always thought, even if you hate the song, I want you to be able to like the music video, as opposed to a music video that just sort of goes along with the song. I feel our performance and what we bring to the stage should be even bigger than the music we make. So festivals have worked for us because you get to play to these new ears and maybe people who just know a song or two. And we really feel like we can win them over. We like the competition of it. And of course, having, you know, in some of these situations, like thousands and thousands of people in front of you, there's an energy about that. But, you know, there's also energies about, you know, there in Chicago, whether it's, I have memories at the Vic Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Or I think this place just closed down, but I used to love, it was a bigger theater, about 4,000 cap, sort of was a little beat up. Can you think of?
Yeah, that is. If it's not the Concord, then it is the Congress.
Congress Theater. Yeah, it's shut
the
down.
The Congress.
Yeah.
That's the one. Yes, the Congress and stuff like that. So, shows like that. Like there is something about playing in a room full of people who know like every word to every song you're playing. That is a really great feeling as well. So, yeah. Luckily, I've had a love for both. I think there's some bands that might like to play only to their fans more that have a type of music that you need to know to get. Like, I don't know. I think of a band like, I don't want to give any examples, but you know the type of band that you really need to know the songs to
yeah,
get into,
sure.
or else you're going to be sort of not welcome in. And me and Kim, we have no problem with putting a Ludacris cover right in the middle of one of our singles.
Awesome.
I feel like those things open doors and windows to let people in who aren't familiar with the songs. We do a lot of little covers or just parts where we put songs on, and Kim's a great dancer, so she's up on the drum set like half the show dancing, and we put it all out there.
Yeah, your shows are so much fun. Like, I love it, and I gotta know, you know, when you're going on tour and you're planning everything out, what's your budget for confetti and beach balls?
It is never enough.
I know, right?
But well, now we've expanded, and so we have these, we'll have this weekend. These like 12-foot diameter beach balls that But the thing is, Kim is like the most conscientious person of all time, and so they're expensive, each one of them that we get, so she's always trying to get people to hit them back by the end of the show so then that it can be deflated and we can use it again.
Bring that back.
But sometimes they disappear. I'm like, how did someone leave with a beach ball that's like larger than a Volvo?
That's so true. You know, and if you haven't seen it, make sure you go and check out their Instagram page and their Facebook page and see the photo, because I've seen some of your tour photos of this enormous beach ball that like spans like 6 or 7 people in full length. So there's that to look forward to at North Coast, which we're very excited to be a part of. We'll be there Sunday, September 4th, checking out Matt and Kim at North Coast. And Matt, thank you so much for joining us today here on Sound Sessions.
Yeah, thanks for having me. What a pleasure.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter @SoundSeshPod, and check us out on Instagram @SoundSessionsWGN.